Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 247-7282.
And you can do that and join the conversation while we have Andrew in studio here. You can get some free tax advice. And for the last couple of weeks, Andrew, of coming in here, you've set the bar extremely high, bringing in some interesting nuggets to the listening audience. What is happening in the world of taxes today?
Well, Mike, today and over the past 2 weeks, the most interesting thread on our attorney listserv for the estate planning section of the North Carolina State Bar has been what to do about deceased taxpayers' stimulus checks.
Okay.
So as we all know, the IRS was using 2018 tax returns, if you hadn't filed your 2019 return, to issue stimulus checks. And so some interesting things were occurring in the office of Harvell & Collins. Just 2 days ago, we got 6 stimulus checks. That's in addition to a couple more that we received in the previous weeks.
Yeah.
And it, interestingly enough, Mike, it would even have the individual's name on it with DECD after it.
Is that right?
Showing they were deceased.
But they still issued it and sent it out.
Correct. Still issued the check. And so, you know, the big thing that came up in this was what as practitioners are we to do? Mm-hmm. If we're administering an estate, do we just deposit the funds into an estate account? Do we advise our clients to hold the funds pending IRS guidance? You know, we just did not know, because you had this, the Treasury Secretary saying one thing, which was you need to return the check.
Yeah.
We had the IRS issuing some guidance saying, well, we're not going to pursue recovery of these payments.
Ooh.
So you're kind of in this little
conundrum.
Yeah. Conundrum, yeah. About, you know, what do we advise our clients to do? Well, yesterday we finally got some guidance on this. And the guidance came back, drum roll, not surprisingly, give it back. We want the stimulus check returned to the IRS. And so they came up with a process and procedure. You would write void in the endorsement section on the back of the check, mail the voided check to the Treasury. There's addresses on the IRS website right now where you can look to see where you need to mail those back to. It says don't staple, bend, or paperclip the check. And then just include a note stating that the individual is deceased.
Yeah.
Now, you know, of course, some of the checks acknowledge the individual was deceased.
Yeah, it's amazing that they would go through that effort and identify the check bearer as being deceased, yet still issue it. Yeah. So we got to send it back. Would you advise people who receive that and who plan to send it back to make a copy to say, hey, I sent it back?
Definitely. We make copies of all of ours that we've sent back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, also if you've received a stimulus payment via direct deposit or you've already cashed the check, you know, then they're saying you need to submit a personal check, money order, payable to the United States Treasury, again, to the appropriate IRS location. And then you need to write 2020 EIP and then the taxpayer identification number on the memo line of the check when you return it. And then, again, a brief explanation relative to returning it. Another interesting situation, Mike, is what happens if you have a husband and wife, for example, who filed jointly and one of the spouses has deceased, the other spouse is still living, but yet they get a check for both parties.
Got to return half.
Got to return half. That's what the ruling came down and said, you know, the guidance is, look, if you can deposit that check, and some banks, you know, they're not supposed to allow, if they have both names on there and one of the individuals is deceased, they're not supposed to allow that check to clear, but sometimes it happens, especially if you have a joint account out there.
Yeah.
So just for our listeners who have that issue going on, recognize that just because you deposited the money doesn't mean it, you know, go and spend it and it's yours. You know, they are going to, they have acknowledged that they want the money back. And to me, that means there's probably going to be some collection of that money in the event that you fail to return it.
How would they know that? I mean, how, if I play devil's advocate and say, hey, there's 330 million Americans, Andrew, how are they going to find me?
Yeah.
I mean, my husband just died last month.
Yeah.
How are they going to find me?
Well, I'd say the death master list, the Social Security death master list is one area where they could cross check.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another way to do it is that when you file that final tax return for the individual, you do write deceased next to the individual's name. And so they could have records that way. You know, this is one of those things where there was a huge push to get stimulus money in people's hands, and they wanted it to be over-inclusive, not under-inclusive, because they didn't want it, someone to be out there needing funds and not getting it. So this is part of the process. When you take that aggressive action, you get the checks out as quickly as possible, you're over-inclusive. Well, now the issue is, some people have to end up giving those funds back. And I do think they'll probably issue some guidance here in the next little bit about what that's going to look like relative to, you know, collecting, whether or not they'll just offset refunds.
Yeah.
Remember with tax penalties relative to not having insurance, the IRS said, look, we're not going to come after you, levy, lien, any of that. But if you happen to get a refund, we're going to take the money back at that point in time.
Yeah.
That's probably where I think this will be heading relative to potentially deceased taxpayers and receiving these checks, and especially with joint filers.
Because they know where you live, and they That's know right. your bank account, too. And then you say about this master death list that they could cross-check. But, I mean, you know, for people in Chicago who have died 20 years ago are still voting, but that's another
there
story for another day. A quick question, though. What would be the penalty if someone were to say, you know what, I'm just going to do it. Let them catch me. Is it a federal offense we're talking about here?
You're looking at just interest being tacked on to the money.
Okay.
I mean, I think that they're going to be pretty – I think it's going to be pretty kid's gloves. That's why I said I don't think they'll take aggressive collection action at the end of this. But I do believe that there's a likelihood that they will offset refunds. I think that's probably pretty high.
And again, Andrew, just to tell the listeners who may not be aware of the tax implications, if any, on this stimulus check, is it taxable? Do we have to claim this next year in our taxes?
No.
Yeah.
It's not taxable income.
It's free money.
Yeah, so it's just
remarkable.
Don't need to worry about that.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. The last thing I want to talk about this week is the North Carolina legislature has passed remote notarization, remote witnessing, and execution of healthcare directives. That includes a healthcare power of attorney and a living will without witnesses, just a notary relative to those two documents.
Okay.
So the governor signed into law. They call it the Emergency Remote Notary Witnesses and Execution of Healthcare Directives. That's the section that it falls under. So through August 1st, 2020, if our listeners out there were thinking, hey, I really want to get my estate planning documents together. I want to get that will done.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get those powers of attorney taken care of. But I don't want to come to your office, Andrew. I don't want to come see you in person. Is there a way for us to handle this remotely? The answer I had to give them prior to this bill was, we can have that initial telephone conference. You can tell me what you want in your documents. We can go over it.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you are going to have to make a trip to our office to sign your documents at the end of the day to make sure they're 100% fully legal in nature. With this new law that was passed, we now have the ability to communicate over the phone, get your wishes, send you your documents, and then execute those documents via video.
Nice. All without having to come into the office.
All without having to come into the office. So, you know, this is where I want to make this clear. You know, we can do this without even having you come to the office, which is you know, very interesting, because this has never been done before.
Yeah.
Obviously in the state of North Carolina, I think several other states as well. There's some requirements. You know, the video must occur in real time.
Mm-hmm.
So got to be FaceTime, got to be Zoom, something of that nature. It must have clear sight and sound. So we don't want this buffering issues going on. Capable of recording or taking screenshots during the video so you can show the execution. The principals must verify they're actually in the state of North Carolina. So you have to say, yes, I'm physically present in here. If the notary does not know the principal, then we need to get some identification. So when you ultimately send the documents back, we're going to need to see copies of a driver's license. Is going to be the easiest way to do it, because it needs to have picture and a signature on a passport, something of that nature. And the notary must be able to observe the principal sign the document, and the principal must state what document they are actually signing when they're putting pen to paper.
That all makes sense.
So, you know, just very interesting new world.
Yeah.
You know, and the question becomes, Mike, is that will some of these things that are happening during the coronavirus crisis live on?
Yeah.
You know, right now this bill clearly ends on August 1st, 2020 for remote notarization and video. But, you know, you could see the legislature extending it.
Sure.
You know, certainly. Sure. And, you know, could this become one of those things that is an option down the road and becomes not necessarily the norm, but look, you know, if someone's in a pinch and we need to get these documents executed, you know, would this be a viable alternative in the future? And that is to be determined.
Right.
But, you know, once something gets into law and once people get comfortable with it, you know, maybe in the future you could see this, you know, being a process that lawyers can use and clients can use to get documents, especially in a pinch, you know, where you can potentially email a document to someone and then set a video conference very quickly, promptly afterwards, and then watch the execution and get everything taken care of. And then that document's 100% fully valid, legal, right there on the spot. Then they send them to us, let the notary put their seal on it. And then you've got it taken care of.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the answer, the simple answer to your question is yes. Yeah. Some of these things.
Well, I mean, you know, Mike, we've been talking about electronic wills. You know, that's one of the big topics in the estate planning community as well. And so, you know, this is part of that. You know, you talk about electronic wills potentially coming into play.
Yeah.
Here we are. We got remote notarization. Is this a step in that direction where the North Carolina legislature would be comfortable with it?
We'll
find out.
The door has been open.
That's right.
If you want further legal advice in taxes, life and taxes, call Harvell and Collins. Ask for Andrew Foster, 252-726-9050. They are open, harvellandcollins.com, for more information. Thanks, Andrew.